Welcome to Failing Up, a podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It can even mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led them to something positive.
We hope this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
My name is Eden.
And I'm Guy. Yeah. So, Alon, you know the concept of the show, the basic concept of the show? Have you?
I read it, but I didn't retain it.
Okay, so the idea is I had listened to Howard Stern and Conan O'Brien was on the show, and he said, you know, 35 of the worst things ever had to happen to me in order for me to get the Tonight Show. Basically saying that in order to succeed, you first have to fail, right?
Yeah.
And fail miserably. So, and it almost felt like, you know, the more you fail, the higher you can achieve. So,
or the fact that you took a few failures to get to places where you felt successful.
Well, yeah, and also you can't fail without trying. And
true.
almost every single thing in life will be a failure, no matter what. Always.
Right.
Every relationship except for one, hopefully. Every friendship will at some point fail except for one or two. Everything you do will eventually fail. Your body will fail.
That's what we are. Life is a terminal illness, really.
Yeah, everything is destined to be a no, and occasional yeses are really nice. But the more you fail, it's just a result of having attempted things, I suppose.
I think you just tweeted something like that, didn't you? Something about failure.
Yeah, I did tweet something about the fact that everything you're going to do always will fail, no matter what. And so you might as well do things you like, because you'll fail, at least fail enjoying yourself.
I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, that really is the way to go if you think about it. So, Alon Gale, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Thank you for being on Failing Up with Eden and I. You are an inspirational story, I think, people will find. You're laughing at me already, but we've had multiple people on the show. We had Andy Lassner, the first one. We talked about that already, how he went from Hasidic Jew to heroin addict.
Yeah, that's a big leap.
And from heroin addict to executive producer of The Ellen Show. I know you don't have the same path.
No one has the same path.
That's the whole thing about the show is everybody has a different... Failure means different things to different people,
as
we like to say. But let's talk about you. You were born and raised in L.A.
That is true.
Like me.
Just like you. Kind of a rarity.
Were you born at Cedars?
I was born at St. John's.
Oh, okay.
In Santa Monica.
Still white.
It's white, and it's about... it's funny because it's about 12 blocks from where I live now, and my office is about 6 blocks from my high school. And my mom still lives in the house.
You go to Crossroads?
So, no, I went to Uni High.
Uni, that's where I took my SATs.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, there we go. You should have.
And so I have like a
you.
Weird. No, I didn't do very well.
Town. That's why I cheated off you.
Weird small town life, but in LA, it's
right.
All like within 10. It's all within 3 miles of each other.
Right. Yeah, I grew up in kind of West LA too, and then we moved here when I was a little bit older.
Into this black hole triangle place.
Right?
The
Bermuda Triangle.
Do you feel like you grew up a wealthy kid?
I definitely grew up with more than I deserved financially.
Okay. Did you work? Did you have jobs when you were a kid?
Yeah. I started... what did I do when I was a kid? I started working at a video store when I was 16.
Okay.
That's the first like job I had.
Yeah.
Did that for a while.
Was it like a Blockbuster?
It was a Hollywood Video.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That
not
was better
anymore.
Than Blockbuster, by
Will
the way.
Shern Gailey. Hi, thank you for calling Hollywood Video Westwood Village on Gailey Boulevard, where
now
you can pre-order Star Wars Phantom Menace and receive rentals for a year. This is Elon. How can I help you?
Did you collect late fees?
I won an award for collecting the
wow.
most late fees, and I was promoted to assistant manager for my late fee collection. And I got up to $8 an hour.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
That's big.
That's huge.
What did you learn from that job, looking back on it? Anything?
Yeah, that I love movies. I love talking about movies. I love being around movies. And I learned that I could watch things ad nauseum and never get tired of them. I've seen like the movie Amadeus probably, I'm really not exaggerating, 300 or 400 times at least.
With Gary Oldman?
No.
No.
With F. Murray Abraham, Tom Hultz.
Oh, okay.
That movie's amazing. It is amazing.
It's the best movie ever made.
I've seen Goodfellas, I feel like 300 plus times.
Yeah.
Personally. And Blazing Saddles, too. I might have seen
that's a great
1,000 times, possibly. Because I've been watching that since I was like 8 years old. My parents are great.
I've seen Steel Magnolias 1,000 times.
And I learned that I'm really competitive with myself.
In what respect?
I always like to do better than I could do.
Okay.
That's a good thing, though. That's the way you improve.
So, yeah. Hey, I watched this 300 times. No, I'm going to watch it 400 times.
Right. I didn't collect late fees because I cared about Hollywood Video getting late fees.
Right.
I collected them because I wanted to do the thing well, whatever the thing was.
Right.
Is that some form of like OCD?
Totally. Or? It's OCD. It's also just insecurity. And so you have a constant fear of disappointing. So you have to overperform all the time.
I understand.
So I always try to overperform because I hate myself so much most of the time that I have to really fight for those little precious moments of like personal pride or glee.
Have you been to therapy?
Yes. Quite a few times.
But you still hate yourself.
Yeah, that's a permanent thing.
Hey, that's... Everybody I know in therapy hates themselves and out of therapy for that matter. So it's not a benchmark.
Yeah, I don't think liking myself is that valuable. I don't really believe in the concept of the self working independently of others or like finding oneself or knowing oneself. I only think that people exist in relation to other people. And so liking myself is kind of irrelevant. And whether it's good or bad, I gauge my happiness, which I also find kind of irrelevant, as to how other people respond to me.
So it's almost like it's not like you don't like yourself. It's like you're indifferent.
Subjectively, I'm indifferent. I objectively think I'm subpar.
Why?
In most
Where?
Ways. I don't like how I look. I don't like how I don't mind my voice. I think it's soothing. But
sorry, let's back up for one second. What don't you like about your look? Like how you look?
I have total body dysmorphia. I always feel fat and weird. Hmm. I hate my teeth. I hate smiling. Short, hairy in weird places. I mean, like, look at me.
Has this been going on for a long time?
Yeah, this is always.
Always.
This is,
you've always felt the same way.
Yeah.
Were you happy as a kid?
Not particularly.
Were you a good student as a kid?
I did well in things that were creative, like writing. My reading comprehension is quite nice. But things that require memorization, formulas, math... Total failure.
You did well enough to get into college, though.
Oh, UC Riverside, yeah.
But you also went
to... And I lasted for 4 months there.
And then you went to UCLA, no?
I went to UCLA. Kind of fucking cheated my way in there, because I went to UCLA Extension while I was doing catering, and I did some of that in high school to take screenwriting classes, and I didn't really apply through the school. I just took screenwriting classes for 2 years. So I never got a degree. I just went there for 2 years and took screenwriting classes.
Interesting.
That's
so
like me at NYU.
I went to UCLA.
I didn't really go to NYU. I just did classes there.
Yeah.
Huh.
And I studied. I did the master's course and I really enjoyed it and I learned a lot.
That's great.
And then I went to school for psychology for about a year.
But who needs a degree? That. It's really all what you
Are you guys
you
saying
learn?
That I could go to Harvard and take a class and then be like, well... I went to Harvard. I mean, I didn't graduate.
You also
from
have
Harvard.
Lunch at Harvard and just say I went
well,
to Harvard.
Well, I did. I've done that before, but that's not the same.
Right? Yeah, but I always say I dropped out of three places. I think other people refer to me as like having gone somewhere. I always just say I dropped out of college a bunch of times.
You dropped out of UC or Riverside. You dropped out of UCLA?
Yes. Well, I dropped out because I just didn't. When it became time to actually make it official and do the GEs and all that, I just didn't. Antioch, I went for a year and then. I worked really hard to get a job so that I wouldn't have to go anymore because
right.
I just can't. I'm not good at it, and I don't like it.
Well,
it's
in those four years, whatever, when you're going to school, what is Ilan thinking I'm going to do for a living?
Wow. Well, back then, I thought I was going to be like a great indie filmmaker, documentarian, and I'd worked on a couple of documentaries and things like that, and... Yeah, I thought I was going to be like a Todd Solondz kind of character.
And in college, or even in high school, are you like a party guy? How would you classify yourself? Are you a jock? Are you
no.
a nerd? What are you?
In high school,
theater
I was
guy?
Like a musical theater nerd. And always kind of well-liked, but not particularly popular. Just like I was kind of right middle of the road. You know, I kind of wasn't really much of a partier at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was too afraid of everything.
Mm-hmm. And was not, is there anything in you as far as not graduating college that you feel like, ugh? Or are you like, no, there's just no way I would have been able to graduate college?
There's a lot of times where I not really anymore, but like if you asked me 5 years ago if I should have gotten a degree, I would have said yes. And now I don't care or remember it very well.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot of my life.
Okay.
Just because I don't place a great deal of value on the past, I just don't think about it a lot, so I just forget. And someone reminds me of things, like I haven't, you asked me like what I did for a living, and it all came flooding back, but I don't actually have many memories of any of those things. I just know they happened.
What do you care about then, if you don't care about the past? The present? Are you, do you live in the present? The now?
I was talking to my girlfriend the other day, and we were trying to talk about if we can use the bullshit word of like what your passion is.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing I really have any strong interest in is feeling understood for whatever reason by a large number of people.
So Twitter.
That's one of the ways that all comes out. I really like asking people questions. I really like challenging my own thoughts about what things mean and challenging others, but primarily to learn from their responses. That's why I think that's the baseline of all the things I do, even though, and then finding ways to also make them commercial in order to, unfortunately, water them down a bit, but at the same time, have more interactions with more people and get wider range of feedback. Because the thoughts in my head, it's a vacuum. Without feedback, they don't improve or grow.
So do you want, is it feedback or validation?
It's both, probably. I mean, validation everyone wants.
Right.
But I need the feedback in order to have more ideas, in order to do anything interesting. You know, I can't just like go and sit somewhere and write and create anything of value, I don't think. I need to listen to things and find springboards and be inspired by other people's thoughts. And I'd like to try to listen to really bad ideas and have really bad ideas, and then hopefully something good will come from that.
Well, sometimes, yeah, I feel like, you know, when I ask someone what like people always ask the people, what do you want for your birthday? Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what, just tell me what you don't want. Like, let's start with like what's bad. And that helps me find sometimes what's good.
I totally agree. It's just, and that just goes back to the idea of just different modes of thought, mm-hmm. where if you ask someone a question they haven't been asked before, you'll always get a more interesting answer.
Totally.
And while the answer may itself not be one of value, it may lead you down a course that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm just fucking bored most of the time. So I try to do things that are interesting or try to just have conversations that are interesting because...
It's stimulating.
Yeah, I like to be surprised. Mm-hmm. I like to hear thoughts I haven't heard.
Speaking of the birthday thing, though, the way I feel about it is once you're like 13, 14, people should stop asking you that question. I'm turning 41 next Sunday. Well, by the time people hear, I'll be...
Happy birthday. Thanks. What do you want for your birthday?
And that's what my sister, my mom asked me, that, and I was like... What every 41-year-old wants, candy. Like, it's a dumb question. I don't want anything. I'm doing okay for myself. I have an Xbox. Whatever I want, I can buy myself. I'm an adult. If you want to call me and wish me a happy birthday, Mom, because I forgot 2 years ago, mm-hmm. that would be great. Like, that makes me happy. But otherwise, I don't really need anything. So you don't need to ask me what I want for my birthday.
And isn't that, in some ways, the point of the question? Isn't it a good feeling? To know that you have what you want, to know that you have what you need and that you're able to get the things that you need. That's a nice thing to be able to say.
Not everybody can say that.
Absolutely. But so my dad's like, just ask me, like, what do you want for your birthday? I'm like, really? There's nothing in the world I could even think of. Like, what would you say to your, if your parents were here, and could you think of something that you could say, oh yeah, I want that for my birthday. Like right
now.
Totally.
Yeah. There's things that I want that I can't afford that I want.
How about you? And is it about affording it, or is it just about, like, I don't know.
What would I want for my birthday?
Yeah, what do you want for your birthday, Alon?
The only thing I can think of wanting is, like, just some kind of, like, mental peace.
Okay.
For a minute, but that's not
something. Is that on Amazon, or?
Something
that
one can
thing.
Afford you.
Like, yeah. The thing I want is not actually a thing. It's an experience that I think, I don't really want, if I want something, I'll just fucking get it.
Right.
Like, if it's I want to take, like, a certain amount of classes because I think it'll enrich my life and all that stuff.
Sure.
So it's more, you know, I don't know.
It's fun. It's fun. It's fun to complain about being so lucky that the thing you want is like just some quiet in your brain. Like,
right.
What a What a stupid thing to
say. What a white person problem.
If it's, you know, it's really hard for me to talk a lot because I, you know, if the premise of this show is failing up, I don't, you know, the reason I laughed when you started the whole thing is that I don't see myself as remotely inspirational in any way. So for me, I just feel like I'm a guy sitting here complaining on a microphone to two people. No. But I just had a, you know, I have a very nice day and I have a nice life.
You have a good, but you have a story, Alon. It's not just, and we'll get to it, but it's not just that. We talked about Twitter and so I want to get into that a little bit. Do you remember what year you joined Twitter?
2009.
We all did, I think.
I did, yeah. I did. Mm-hmm. So, but when did you first get a bigger audience? Was it around 2012?
Yeah, probably can't remember. It was a quick jump from like 10,000 to 20,000, and then the Diane thing. I had 35,000 or so when the Diane thing happened. Right. That was the end of 2012, and that jumped to like 170.
Actually, that was 2013, and 2012 was when you live tweeted your blind date.
Oh, yeah.
So for people who don't know, Alon live tweeted a blind date. During the blind date, the girl who is on the date with him finds out from a friend that he's live tweeting, and she freaks out and she leaves, right?
Yeah.
But it turns out that was just a big hoax.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. So that gets you your first...
Well, or as I like to call it, just a story.
Okay. It's not a hoax.
Fiction.
It was a performance. Is that fair to say?
It's a story. It's all stories.
When that happens, are more people pissed off at you, or are more people like, fuck yeah, man, that was awesome?
That's a good question. I think I hope that people who listen to me talk are there for a story and not for news journalism.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And if they're there for the wrong reason, then then that's kind of their fault. And I've never hidden the fact that I fabricate things a tremendous amount on the internet. The truth is that everyone does. I just do it well.
Yeah.
And I have fun with it. Yeah, a lot of people get upset, but a lot of people get upset about everything.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think a lot of people, the people that follow me tend to have fun. I think that's why they follow me.
Yes.
I think that's why almost everyone that followed me then still follows me. And if they don't, that's okay. I wish them that I wish they'd spend their time more.
Do you check who unfollows you?
No.
You don't know who unfollows. Did you look at who follows you? Like, oh, Rosie just followed me. I'm going to follow her back.
This isn't one of those things. I check the verified tab only.
Okay, that's fine. That's a little bit elitist, Alon, but yeah. I'm going to let you pass.
Well,
on that
the sad thing is, and this is even it's not even more elitist, is there's just so many people,
right,
that I don't have the time to scroll through.
Yeah, that's.
I hope that usually when it's someone I know or someone I've met or someone, I read all my mentions. Mm-hmm. And when someone says something interesting, I'll respond to it, whether I know them or not. And then sometimes I'll follow those people, but I don't do it out of I don't like search through.
So when you do get a reply from somebody, is that like, because you were kind of talking about it earlier where it's you like the interaction, but like, is it like, yes, whether it's good, whether it's bad, like, are you happy? Because I know a lot of people get at replies and they're like, fuck, not, like, leave me alone. Especially I feel like women, like attractive women will tweet and they'll have 30 guys like, oh, blah, 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 I got something for you to say. And I'm like, ugh, you guys are pathetic. But with you, you probably have that kind of like where a lot of people react to your tweets.
Yeah.
Is that fun? Always.
Yeah. It's always fun. Even when I get mad, it's fun. I like feeling things. And mad is a feeling, and it's a worthwhile one. It's one of the things I'm best at. is feeling angry.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You don't seem like an angry kind of guy.
No, I'm
very even keeled.
I'm there's a lot of tumult underneath that, all that stuff.
So this is a facade, is what you're telling me.
I think angers are things that, I think emotions should be felt and only expressed when they're valid, but emotions come from within and should live within, and then you can express them when they're warranted. Like, if someone says something to me on the internet, I can feel angry, and nothing wrong with the feeling, but to express the anger means I have to really feel it, right?
Right.
So I think that goes for everything. Like, it's not so much a facade, it's that I don't care enough to break through this.
I understand.
If something gets me really angry, I'll express it. Something that's been really happy, I'll express it.
Have you freaked out on somebody on
Oh,
Twitter?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, actually, didn't you? You got into a war of words with Chuck Lorre because he called The Bachelor idiotic.
I did. I mean, I just made some jokes about how Dharma and Greg was a bad TV show, even though I liked it. But, yeah.
So the first thing, that the first blind date thing, does that that's the first jump in your Twitter, like big jump? Or no?
I honestly don't remember. I don't want
to... I'm just pushing it to get to 2013.
Yeah.
You are on a plane, correct?
Yes.
Before you get on that plane, do you know what you're going to do?
No.
So you're bored, right?
Yeah.
So you sit down on the plane, and you're like, you're on the plane, and you're like, you know what? I'm just going to do one of these performances.
Well, here's what really happened. What really happened was I got on the plane. I'd missed my first flight. I just booked this flight on the way to the airport. I was in a terrible mood. The flight attendant staff, it was Thanksgiving Day. They were so cool and so kind, and we were a little bit delayed, and they were just so chill. And this one woman got up and just got in this guy's face.
Yeah.
And it was so horrible, and I was so mad, but I knew that getting involved, you know, would just make it worse. I just, you know, I like looked at her, but I didn't, you know, you can't help it. Because he's doing his thing of being like fake apologetic.
Yeah.
And he's doing it really well. And the other flight attendants are being very cool and like defending him and being fake supportive of the horrible person who's just like, it's my Thanksgiving. And he's like, look, you know, I promise we'll do our best. I'm really sorry. Things that he shouldn't have to say. And so I started scribbling this note that was just like things I want to say. I was also, you know, still pretty hungover and maybe also drunk. And I just started doing it. And the funny thing is that I said to myself, I won't lose that many followers today because it's Thanksgiving, so no one's watching.
Yeah.
So I can just play it because I like doing it. I never really thought about it as a way, because whenever I did it, I would often lose followers because it's annoying to have
tweets.
People tweeting. So I did it on that day in order to avoid losing too many people. Because I paid a lot of attention to that back then. And it just kind of blew up. And I didn't really realize that it was blowing up. I was just having fun. It was a fun story. And I liked the narrative. I liked the timing of it all. I liked that it was super relatable. I like really simple things. I like really simple storytelling.
So the story is that you wrote this letter supposedly to a lady who's in 7A, Diane in 7A. And she writes back to you, and a war of words kind of ensues between the two of you.
Yeah.
So who's writing the Diane napkin? Are you also writing it, but consciously with a different handwriting? How does
no.
that work?
I just thought, what would I say to me if I was her? And of course, I had Wi-Fi. That's how I was doing it all. So
right.
I just texted a friend of mine who was in L.A., and she didn't even know what was going on. I just wrote, write this down on a piece of paper, take a picture, and send it to me. And she did. And at that moment, I actually wasn't that concerned about the legitimacy of the thing because, like, all of my photos had a plane in them, like, obviously Sky Mall in the background, and hers was, like, really obviously poorly lit on a piece of paper in, like, an office somewhere, you know? But it was fun. So, yeah, she wrote those. She didn't know what was going on until afterwards.
And what point, you're on the flight doing this on Wi-Fi, what point do you go, oh, my God, this is something huge?
That's not really until that night. It just felt like a funny little Twitter thing. You know, people did it all. It felt the same as when I did the blind date thing or when I had like a really funny tweet about kale. It just felt like that, just more of them. It didn't feel significantly different.
Were you aware of Alon at that point?
I was.
Do you remember following this? Because I remember.
I probably wasn't. Again, it was Thanksgiving, so I probably wasn't looking.
Yeah.
Right.
But I heard about it the next day, you know, through Huffington Post or something.
I remember being on.
But then I was just like, was I asleep during all this? Like,
I knew enough about Alon at the time. He'd been on Decently Funny, and I went, well, I'm like 99% sure this is a hoax, but I'm gonna enjoy it, and I'm gonna keep watching, and I'm not gonna, you know, because there's the whole group of people that once they realize Alon's doing this, and they just don't want to have fun. So like, oh, this is fake. It's like, listen, dude, calm down, let him have his thing, whether it's fake or not. The whole time I know it's fake, but then when you actually put it out there, like, whoops, not whoops, but hey, by the way, there's no Diane
yeah.
in 7A. Here's a picture of her, actually, and it was an empty stool or empty chair. Yeah.
But here's the funny thing. Like, Diane, what made it great is everybody knows a Diane in 7A.
Yeah,
everybody's encountered a Diane in 7A, whether it's an actual woman or a guy, you know that person. That person exists on every flight.
Yeah. It's really, it's just really simple.
Yeah.
It's not, that's, and I think that's why it took off.
Right.
And I also think it's why it's not all that interesting.
Well, it's interesting, but it's just
It's interesting the way the media dealt with it.
True,
the story
yes.
itself, if it was real or wasn't real or was anyone else or whatever, it just isn't that, it's just a person being an asshole on a plane and another person being a different kind of asshole and overreacting to it
right.
and watching the interaction. It actually, this kind of stuff probably happens every day.
Yeah.
You just don't hear about it. And it was just one of those perfect storms where the author of the article, because none of it would have happened if it wasn't for a BuzzFeed article that came out.
Oh, really?
Out. And that all happened because, and I actually, an article came out last week, because I agreed to sit down with her back in April and talk through how it all happened. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that, and this is my understanding of it, and this is my interpretation of the events, is that she was following the rooftop breakup story about 2 weeks prior that happened. Remember that one?
Yeah,
Kyle
yeah.
Ayers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she didn't report on it because she wasn't sure if it was real or not. And someone scooped it, and then she felt, you know, she was a new, she was 23, 24. She was a new writer at BuzzFeed and trying to make a name, and good
right.
for her. And when she saw this, she just jumped on it and reported it as news. And I understand that people don't like having their news reported to them if it's inaccurate. I can't do anything about that because I'm not a newsman.
Yeah, that's why I think if you want to follow the news, don't necessarily...
Right, and that's where it's interesting to me, is that this was a really interesting pivotal shift in what is news and what isn't, and how the internet has to parse information in a different way.
Totally.
And it's an interesting, that part is really fascinating to me. I think it's actually quite boring to others, but I find it totally fascinating.
I think it's shocking how little background the media actually does before they report a story. There was just one about this couple that found a safe while they were remodeling their house, and there was $50,000, an old bottle of bourbon, blah, blah, blah. And it was the Chive, once again, who did a hoax, who set it all up, and it was on every news station. But
yeah.
they just see something, and they run with it, and they're like, this is real now.
Yeah, well, you have to, you know, it's when you're dealing with things like this, you have to remember that everyone has their own incentive, right? And that's their job. I don't blame them. I have no, my only hostility towards the author of that article was that in some media, it claimed that she reached out to me for comment, and that got out, that I had avoided it.
Right.
And she hadn't, and she acknowledges that she hadn't reached out for comment, which changes the whole context. Other than that, I get why she would do it, and if I were her, I would lie about searching for comment. She claimed she didn't, but nonetheless.
Right.
I would have, like, her job is to get people to click on things. That's fine. It's not my job, but that's her job, and I respect that. It's not my choice. But it's fine. And who am I to judge how someone else makes their living? It's not hurting anyone. That's what I know. There was no people were hurt in any of this. No
right.
humans. In fact, fewer people were hurt in my non-story than in almost any news story that is real ever. Because usually some victim, someone's had something perpetrated upon them. All that were hurt were the feelings of people who cared about something that didn't matter.
What percentage
of...
Oh,
isn't that a nice commentary about, like, society?
Yeah.
Like, look at you. You guys care so much about this
about
thing.
About nothing.
About nothing.
I find it all really, really...
Fascinating.
It's very funny. It's very fascinating.
How many people, like, what percentage of the people were upset with you, do you think? Was it 75%?
I mean, it felt right down the middle to me. I mean, it's also... I didn't engage very much, you know, like Good Morning America and all those people wanted to have me on. I was like, this is not a thing. I'm not engaging this. I decided to do one interview with ABC News as a really simple one. I wasn't looking to get famous out of it. I had all the opportunities. I wasn't interested. It's just a nothing. It was a fucking bullshit little story that I'm glad people had fun with.
And
why
not?
Everyone had fun.
Why not use it to your advantage? Is that cheesy? Selling out?
It's not selling out. It's do you want to be known for that? I don't mind. People do know me for that. But do I want to say, this is me? I'm the guy that did this. No, I wrote a story on Twitter and it stays there. And that's no regrets. I regret almost everything in my life, but not that. Okay. I'd make no changes.
At the year of Elan, by the way, E-L-A-N is who he is. It's
the
just like
follows him. We don't need a.
Okay.
Everybody knows.
Well.
I feel like everybody knows your Twitter now. Like, it's just common knowledge.
Do you feel like you're Twitter famous?
And the year of Elan. Like, it's
Thing. Do you feel Twitter famous?
Do I feel Twitter famous? I have a lot of followers on Twitter. I don't know how to answer the question.
It's okay.
I have a weird. People come up to me a good amount. Actually, more so off Instagram than Twitter, and interact with me and just want to say hi. So I guess so.
Okay. Do you like that? Do you like when people acknowledge you and say hi? And
like if you're on the street, they're like, hey, Elan.
I like it when they say hi. Yeah. I don't like it when it turns into a conversation about if I can follow them.
Yeah, well, that's like me. Like, hey, follow back. And I'm like, great. That's a great thing to say to someone to get them to follow back.
I think it's really cool, and I think it's really, this goes back to the original concept for me of not really seeing myself in that way, even though I kind of have to acknowledge it is that I think it's weird that anyone gives a shit what I have to say. I'm glad they do. I am strangely humbled by it. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, but I'm not sure why anyone's paying attention. I'm really, really glad they are. And I hope that I can say things that are valuable, but I don't always feel like I can.
It's valid.
You do different things. You're not the normal tweeter. Like one thing I was just thinking about, and I'm going to guess, knowing you, that these are, I don't want to say fake, but they're put together, which mm-hmm. are, you put up texts to your ex-girlfriend,
Liz.
Supposedly.
Yeah, Liz.
And like she's having a baby, and supposedly Elan is saying, or like every joke to her or comment to her is like, the baby's mine. Even though you hadn't had sex with her in that 9-month period. So there's no way the baby's yours.
That
right?
Either of us know about, but you never know.
Right.
Neither of us are aware
of it. So
these
are fake, right?
I mean, no, they're all real.
Those are real texts that you're sending to your ex.
They are all 100% real texts that I'm sending to my ex, Liz, who lives in Seattle with her fiance.
But she knows it's a joke.
I'm sure. Otherwise, her responses would be crazy. But they are, you know, she's not unfamiliar with the fact that I post them online. She'd be nuts. So I send them, and she responds.
Okay, I understand.
They're real. They're all real.
So let's talk more about texts. You run an Instagram account called Texts From Your Ex.
Yes.
No Twitter account, though.
No. It's not, first of all, I don't have the time for this, for all this nonsense.
Okay. How did this even start? Because of
it
how
it started because
text.
I was always texting my exes, and people started Instagram DMing me a conversation with their exes and just saying, hey, do you think this is funny? Would you post this on your account? Like, you're so good at texting your ex, blah, blah, blah. You know, and the other thing about, I just want to say about the thing with the ex-girlfriends, because I've texted more than one of them and posted more.
Right.
Is that I always, the one thing you don't see, and I think that's normal, is I always ask for permission. I would never actually.
In hindsight?
No, before I post it. I would never
that's
actually.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're like, you get the thing, and then you're like, hey, by the way, can I post this on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I would never actually put anything on the. I don't mind making fun of myself. I don't mind making myself look like a bad guy because I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. But I would never post private information about another person for me, unless they're totally anonymous. Totally anonymous, that's different for me.
I want to get back to text from your ex in a second, but are there people that follow you on Twitter just because they hate you?
I'm sure.
Like, do you have people that are steadily throwing?
Not really.
No.
No. I used to. I've dealt with those people pretty well over the years, and generally speaking, when I respond to one in a fighty kind of way, the other people that follow me will just go and get in side fights with them.
Sure.
So because it's not fun, people have generally stopped. I get very, very, I get a surprisingly low amount of negative feedback.
That's awesome.
I should get so much more.
So you recognize that. Sometimes you're a little bit, you toe the line. So
I play the role of a jerk in real life sometimes, too. I'm really a nice person, but
I
that
agree.
Can be quite boring. And sometimes you just have to say shit to stir it up.
So you intentionally, you are trying to look like an asshole sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, sure.
And that just because it's fun for you.
Yeah, and it's fun for other people. People like it.
Because it causes... Because
I'm never actually mean to anyone. That's the thing. That's why I feel okay about it. I'm always mean in concept. I'm always mean about some fictitious character in my mind or about like a group that doesn't exist. It's always, it's really always based on nothing. And other people, you know, there was a radio guy who I was in love with as a kid. His name was Phil Hendry.
Love him. Interviewed him. He's great.
And Phil, he's one of the most brilliant minds I've ever, I used to listen to him every day. And one of the things he did was he created characters that were supremely hateable, and he'd have callers call in and interact with them. And that was my favorite show. It was so great. And I don't do that. I'm not good at that. I don't have that style or that skill. But I also don't really care if people don't like what they've made of me in their minds. So I give them some ammo, and I let them have fun. And if not liking me is fun, have fun.
And that's fun for you.
Yeah, sure. Who cares? It's also endlessly meaningless. That's the part that I think people miss.
So what I'm understanding from you is you don't take anything personally.
It's very, very hard. As long as it's, you know, again, I also don't mean you can't hate me more than I hate me. I don't know how to do that. If we get, you know, when people talk about like, if they have actual information about like, I get really protective of other people in my life. If someone says something mean about a friend of mine in a photo I post, I'll go to town on them. I'll go bananas. So, you know, every time I post a photo of me, I get 85 like, oh, it's Castaway, it's Tom Hanks, you're the homeless. Like, I don't care about any of that. You say something mean about someone I'm with, family, friends, I get really defensive and okay. I'll attack. That doesn't happen that often anymore because people have seen what happens, which is not fun for them. And it's not me, it's that.
But it's also, I think, not fair. Like, if you're posting something on your account and they're attacking someone else and it's not their account, who the fuck are you to even, like...
Right.
Every one of those people are losers, let's be honest. Like,
yeah, it's a terrible thing. And I kind of know what's going to happen when I do it with me, and I don't mind. With me, it's really hard to take things personally because I also know I do it to myself. Like, right. I've done it. I'm not a victim here.
Yeah.
I've created this whole persona. I'm aware of it. What bums me out is when people try to interact with me in my real life as if they're talking to that guy. Because just in the way that I don't walk up to you and pretend that your life is only the things that happen on your Facebook wall, like, that's a small part of you, and right. It's relevant, and we can talk about it, and I'm interested. But there's something that really bums me out about when people... It's more so when people who I know in real life are affected by the outside persona that I don't really get, and it bums me out.
Okay.
That part bums me out. I like to think of people as being able to be more than one thing. I think people can be a lot of different things, and I don't think they have to be in contradiction, and I don't think they have to actually make sense either. I think you can just be a lot of stuff. That's why I do a lot of stuff. I just, you know.
So is Alon a good dude, but also an asshole?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Totally fair. If I care about you, I'll do anything for you. And if I don't, I won't. And I'll be honest about it. And some people may think that's, you know, an asshole. You know, I met someone not that long ago, about a week ago, who had been following me on Twitter for a long time and who kept asking me to follow her. And at some point, she said, why won't you follow me? And I said, because I'm not interested in you. And she said, wow, you're really an asshole. I go, yeah, I mean, I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess that's where I have to go. Because I don't know you, and I'm not interested in you, and you've given me no reason to be interested in you. Because you didn't come up and tell me an interesting story, or tell me about your life, or tell me about your passions. You just asked me to do a thing. Right?
Right.
So in those cases, I'll be an asshole. Hmm. And I'm totally fine with that.
This is a very evolved way of thinking, though. Was this always how Alon felt? Because I feel like I've always been the opposite guy. Like, seriously. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But is this something that you've always been?
Do you want my honest answer is really boring.
Yeah, I want your honest answer. Or is it like through therapy that you've gotten to be like,
No, my honest answer is that I have no idea because I don't know how to think of how I felt about things previously.
Okay.
It's all so filtered and re-remembered. I'd like to say I've always been this way. I probably haven't. I've always been tremendously insecure.
Okay.
And I think I've just learned to deal with it better. But I was always kind of aggressive.
In what way?
I say things.
Okay.
And I hope people respond positively. But if they don't, I know that I'm the catalyst. And so I accept the responsibility.
But you're speaking your mind. You're saying how you truly feel.
I try to.
Whether they think you're an asshole or not.
I try to. What I don't want to do is to say how I feel to someone who hasn't asked for it. You know, I don't walk up to people and tell them what I think about them.
Right.
That's my... It's only when their life and my life come into the same room and require interaction. And I'll do my best to not. But if someone asks me how I feel about them, I'll often be honest. And it's often not positive.
Yeah. I had a guy recently, somebody tweeted Nuzzy and I. And he's like, hey, look at my character that I do on YouTube and give me your honest opinion. And so... I mean, he might be listening, so, but whatever. It was terrible, okay? It's just, it was derivative, it's not funny, yada, yada, yada. And me personally, I would rather not respond than write the truth to him.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that. It just depends if you feel an obligation to that person, right? Most of the time, I wouldn't even click on the thing.
Okay, so you wouldn't write back to that guy.
It depends.
Personally.
You know what I mean? Like if someone walks up, you know, I go to a lot of comedy shows. I love going to stand-up comedy. I go at least once a week, sometimes twice a week to see stand-up comedy. And if somebody comes up to me and asks me how they did, I will tell them.
Really?
Sure.
Okay. I just say, you were great.
I don't say that.
Please don't say that. That's why I never like bringing my friends, because I know they'll tell me I'm great, even if I suck.
Yes.
I don't say that. No? I go, that wasn't very good.
No,
sure.
You do not say that to people.
I absolutely do.
I really respect that. As a comedian, I respect that.
I once got off stage and I bombed so hard, my friend couldn't even look at me. She couldn't look me in the eye. She's like, oh, that was good. And now you know if you sucked. Do I really need to hear that I sucked?
I would rather, and I feel strongly about this. You know, I have a friend, I host comedy shows. And my friend who got me into it, when I started, he would always say, especially because I was drinking back then, I would get really drunk a lot on stage. And he would say, that was really terrible. Never do that again.
Wow.
And it was really, really good feedback. And it was really important. And the first time I did a big show in front of like 150 people, I bombed really hard. And I knew it. And everyone that knew me said, that was a fucking disaster. You were horrible.
Wow.
And they were right. And I respected them. And I was able to improve. And the next time, I did okay. Didn't do great. Did okay. I've never really done great, but I do okay because I'm not a comedian. The point is getting feedback. Like, I don't care what some stranger says to me. Someone walks up to me after a show and says, great job. Fine. I want the people in my life whose opinions I value to tell me I wasn't good.
It doesn't feel like a hot knife to the heart when
No,
you say
it
that?
Feels like a hot knife to the heart when someone who supposedly loves you lies to your face. That's the part that hurts.
Yeah, that he's right. I agree with that.
Someone looks at you, someone you know, someone whose opinion you trust, looks at you and says, you're like, okay, so I just lost a bunch of weight. And for the last 10 years, I've been really unhappy with my appearance. I still am, but I was more unhappy. And when someone would look at me and say like, oh no, you don't look bad. I knew they were lying and they were wrong. They were either lying or they were wrong. So they're either stupid or they were dishonest.
Right.
And those people, the only people that would keep in my life, people would go, yeah, you look like shit. Those are the people I want in my life who will tell me the truth, you know?
Yeah, people are like, you can stand to lose a few. You're like, I respect that.
Yeah, someone that goes like, no, you're in great shape. That's a liar.
That's a liar, and they're also enabling you to continue whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, great, I look so great. I'm going to continue living this shitty, you know, whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, right. No, it's, I
That's
don't,
what, yeah.
It makes
He's
me
right.
It makes me crazy, and it's unpleasant, but it's not for me. It's not for me unpleasant. I actually really like it. And I like it. I like it. I like people telling, because you have to remember, I don't love me that much, right?
Right.
So when someone says like, you could really work on this, I go, yeah, okay, now we're on the same page. Now we can communicate.
what else can I do? Where else do I fucking suck?
Yeah,
oh,
because,
they're good.
Because I'll tell you what, when someone says like, hey, you're doing great, that's the end of the conversation. What are you going to say? Thank you. Then what? Why are we even talking?
Right. That's true. That's true.
Give me something to talk about, man.
Let's back up really quickly, though, because I do want to finish up with text from your ex. Texts from your ex on Instagram. You're putting out a book.
Yeah.
How did this all... Well, two questions about that. So people now start sending you this shit, right? Are you just inundated? Do you have a million of these now?
I have probably 30 or 40,000 unread emails.
Wow. And so you can just easily like, oh, that's good. I'm putting that one up today.
Yeah, and I have a guy that works with me who helps.
So this has gotten so big, you've had to hire somebody.
Yes.
Wow. But you don't advertise on your...
But
how many people do you have following you?
1.5 million on that account.
1.5 million people. And that's like, that account's not a year old, is it?
Not yet.
That's insane. When do you realize, holy shit, that's a great idea?
3 or 4 days. It's funny because it was BuzzFeed again. 3 or 4 days after I did it, BuzzFeed picked it up, bumped it up to 100,000 pretty quick. And then I gave it about a month. And then I started this other one called Tinder Nightmares.
Oh, really?
That has 1.2 million followers now. And then I realized I kind of created a bit of a monster. I'd already had this thing called Unspirational that had 150,000 followers. So I knew that I was onto something when it came to really, really simple, digestible, six-second pieces of enjoyment.
With Tinder Nightmares, is it also conversations?
Exactly the same thing.
Okay, because
straight from Tinder.
I had a girl on Tinder that she had like 4 pictures in one, and she was like 8 months pregnant in every single one of them. I covered her face and I posted it on Twitter. It was somewhere on there. But I was like, I wonder if that's a good Tinder nightmare. But no, you're saying it has to be...
I fully anonymize everything.
So that's the question. When you get an email from somebody of a text, you put it up on there. Because you anonymize it, do they not need to give you permission? Or because they sent it to you, do they not? And especially when it goes to a book.
Well, it's a good question. These in the book have all been vetted. They are all these ones have been put through a process. They've been submitted through a legal source.
Oh, wow.
Where people have granted the rights over to the book.
Wow. Okay.
And further anonymized. So there's really no way for anyone to, and also, you know, things like when I can tell, people often try to submit things that I can tell are written.
Right.
And I, you know, I've done this long enough to know when something's fake, so I don't bother putting it in.
Is there going to be a Tinder Nightmares book?
There is. That comes out December 1st
on
Abrams.
When does Text From Your Ex come out?
This comes out in the UK first next week on September 3rd, and comes out in the US October 13th.
Awesome.
$10.
Yeah.
$10?
$7.80 if you buy it now on Amazon Prime.
That's so cheap. This book is, how many pages is that book?
256.
I looked at Eden because you came in, you went to the bathroom. I looked at your book and I said, this looks like the best book to take a shit with.
It is.
And it's, let's face it, that's the only time we're reading anyway.
You don't need to, the thing about this book is it's just like the Instagram account. You don't even need to read it. It's a great gift. You look at it. It's funny. That in itself is funny. Open it once.
It's like my book over here called Little Hipsters. Like, you don't need to read it.
Exactly.
It's just here because
it's
funny
a fun thing to flip through. Exactly. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. It's fun, though. It's a lot of fun.
This you will make money off of.
We'll see. I mean, if people want to buy it, I don't, for the same reason I don't advertise on my sites, for the most part. Occasionally I'll do something.
Are you not going to promote these things on your sites? Or
a little bit. A little bit. But the thing is that I don't look at any of this as a job. That's when it becomes not fun. I do this for fun. This is just enjoyable. The fact that, you know, I never looked for a publisher. Publishers came to me. And they came to me and they wanted to do it. And I put in very, you know, I work with them and I love them and they're interesting and they're excited. But I do this for fun. And I really hope that it's a fun thing and I want to continue doing things for fun. I'm using all this to launch a t-shirt line that actually comes out next week. It's 100% for charity, every single dollar.
Okay, what's it called?
Unspirational.
Oh, okay. And is it unspirational.com? How do we buy this
you
stuff?
You go to the Unspirational Instagram, and you can find it all through there. And just do this all for fun.
So, but you are a busy man. Now, I know we're not talking about specifics about your job, but you are a producer for The Bachelor.
Yes.
And The Bachelorette.
Yes.
You travel the world.
Yes.
Is that for work?
Yes. Okay. Well, half and half. I travel for work and I travel for fun.
So when the hell do you find time to work on a text from you? I'm serious. Like, every time I see you on Instagram, you're in Malawi. I'm surprised you're here right now.
How are you in Beverly Hills?
And it's not like he's not in Wisconsin.
You know, Guy is an old pal, and when someone who's been nice to you in the past asks you to do something, you do it.
That's very sweet of you.
That's the truth. I mean, I don't know you. I have enjoyed getting to know you. I look forward to getting to know you more. But at the end of the day,
he's a good person.
Guy's always been nice to me. We've had two or three really good conversations at parties. And when someone like that asks me to do something, I'll do it in a heartbeat.
Well, I like a lot. I'm a big fan of everything you do. I think you're a nice person. Like you said, we have hung out socially and stuff. And so I want to get into what happened in 2014, in June of 2014. I could see you're racking your brain.
I just figured out my sobriety.
Right. So can you give us a little bit? You are now sober over a year.
Mm-hmm.
Can we back up and let's talk about Elongale as a drinker? Here's why I'm asking you to do this. Obviously because of the show we do, but also because I've hung out with you at bars. Uh-huh. I never went, wow, Elon was really drunk.
Yeah.
Never even thought you were drunk. You definitely were not a bad drunk.
No.
You were not not angry, not super happy. You couldn't even tell Alon was drunk.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, you've been drinking for a long time, right?
Long time.
When did you start drinking?
Started drinking pretty regularly when I was about 17, I would say. Probably before that, occasionally, but 17 I really started just like really hitting it.
Okay, and
in college when I was 17, like, and I wasn't a party drinker. I was like I would keep bottles of gin in the drawer next to my desk. That kind of drinker.
So you love the taste of alcohol, love everything about alcohol.
So much. Yeah, it's so good.
What's the first time where you're like, oh yeah, and when you're drinking, even like early on, are you a binge drinker? Like, are you passing out from drinking? Or is it just, you're just getting really drunk?
It's a little bit of everything. The last 3 or 4 years was a lot. I would probably drink between 3 and 4 bottles of wine or 1 to 2 bottles of vodka a night.
You were very public, like I said, in June of 2014.
Oh, yeah.
And you came out and said to the world, hey, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And so obviously there were things that led up to this. Was there an actual like rock bottom for you? Because you have a great job and you travel the world.
Weird. That's one of those things that, because people ask that a lot. It's a great question because most people have some kind of really tragic moment where they got a DUI or they got in a fight or they lost their job or something like that. And I was really lucky that none of those things happened to me. All that happened, I mean, it was getting to a point where I was never sober. So that felt unhealthy. I was physically unhealthy. I felt in pain all the time.
You literally woke up in the morning and started drinking.
If I wasn't driving somewhere, I would never drink and drive.
Okay.
But if I wasn't driving somewhere, I would start drinking at noon.
Okay.
Sure.
You know. Not first thing in the morning, but noon.
Well, that's when I got home.
Oh, okay. And you crack open a beer? Wine?
Champagne. Champagne in bed, baby. Come on.
and then it's like, okay, when I wake up, then before I go to work, then when I come home from work, like they're
pretty much always. Yeah. I mean, if I was in an office, I wasn't drinking like in an office. But if I'm on location shooting, I'm having a cocktail for sure.
And what are you? Are you buzzed? Are you drunk? Or are you just even?
There was never a difference. No one ever, when I quit drinking, no one knew other than me telling people. I don't really change that much. I just feel different. The even keel thing you talked about, it's always pretty much that. There's some variation. You get a little more rowdy maybe. But for the most part, I'm always kind of the same.
You're saying no rock bottom. But something had to
happen. Yeah, so about 2 weeks before I quit drinking, I went on this. I was in this really weird thing that I think was attached to the drinking, which was just a decision to just do whatever the fuck I wanted all the time.
Hmm.
And a friend of mine was throwing a party in Anguilla, and I decided, and I didn't have any free time, but I decided I was going to fly there for 16 hours, 24 hours, go to the party, and then fly back. So I did that, and I got completely wrecked on the plane there, and then I got completely wrecked on the boat from St. Thomas to Anguilla, then I got completely wrecked for 16 hours there. And I woke up the next morning, I like just slept like outside in the beautiful rain, and woke up, and one of the guys at the party was an ER doctor. And we started talking, and I was drinking, and it was like, I have like a mimosa or something. And he looked at me, and he said, look, man, you know, I don't know you, but, you know, you look like you're dying.
Wow.
He was like, you look like you're dying. He goes, like, your skin is weird. And the fact, he's like, I saw you drink like 2 bottles of tequila last night and you seemed normal. And that's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, if you see your skin start to yellow, you got like a week. Like, you got to stop. So I didn't take him seriously at all, obviously, because why would I? Because, you know.
You're still drunk.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck you. What do you know?
So about 2 weeks later, I was in Mexico. I was working. And I was really obsessed with mezcal at the time. I was drinking a lot of mezcal, like a bottle or two a night. Oh. And I woke up one morning, and I was in the shower. And I looked down, and I just had what looked like a streak, like a big, thick paintbrush streak down my side, fluorescent yellow. Just like if someone had taken a highlighter to me. And I was in the shower, and I looked down, and I said, okay, I love drinking, but I can't drink if I'm not alive, so I'm not going to drink anymore. And so I didn't.
So wait, right there, you're in the shower, mm-hmm. you recognize, oh my God, that's exactly what the doctor's yeah. talking about.
Yeah.
If that happens to me, my heart starts bumping out of my chest. I'm like, oh my God, I am going to fucking, I freak out personally, and maybe it's my yeah. own anxiety disorder.
I'd probably cry a little bit.
Okay, because you seem like very like, okay, well, then I'm just not going to drink
it. Yeah, but it was simple as that. It was just like, because it really becomes a mechanical choice. It becomes binary. You're either going to drink or you're not. You know, it's not, there's not that emotion behind it really anymore. It's, do you want to live? Yes. Okay, don't drink. If you don't care, then drink. And it really becomes just really simple in that way. So few things in life are that simple. And getting to make that decision was actually quite pleasant. Getting to publicize the decision was a big part of it for me.
I want to talk about that in depth, but I do have one other question.
Sure.
So I have a friend who is an alcoholic, you know, kind of the same situation, that drinking every day thing. When he quit, he had to detox. Like
yeah.
the doctor said, if you just quit, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So like he had to go to the hospital, and they gave him alcohol for a certain amount of time and all that yeah. stuff. Did you do that?
No, I didn't ask anybody or tell anybody for the first 10 or 12 days. I told one person.
You just walked out of that shower and you never had another drink.
That is correct.
And you never, okay. So as a person who loves to drink,
uh-huh.
are you the kind of person that can't go into a bar?
No, or? I spent a lot of time in bars. I still am a member of all the wine clubs I was before. I serve wine in my house with every meal.
That's like me. I don't drink. I've been sober for 6 years.
Oh, congrats.
But my dad was Belgian.
Uh-huh.
So like, I know what good beer is.
Yeah.
I know what good wine is. I still like to serve it to my friends. I don't mm-hmm. mind being around it. I'm a comedian. Yeah. I have to be around it.
I like the smell of it still.
I do too.
I smell every wine I open.
It's a good smell.
Yeah.
I even say like, there should be a perfume called like Cabernet something, you know?
I wore that for 10 years.
Yeah. It's a great.
Always smelled like it.
Jaeger is a different one. I don't know.
Different one.
That's a different cologne you don't want to mess with. But, you know, I still enjoy being around people that are enjoying drinking. Because
yeah.
I know, especially being Jewish, it's a very, like,
yeah.
holiday thing. Like, you have to drink sometimes. But I definitely could resonate with the thought of, like, oh, this is so simple.
Yeah.
This is, like, something so simple that you can do to change the quality of your life.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
such a big way. Like, our minds are so weird. We can go to therapy for years before we fix something inside
yeah.
of us. And that seems way more complicated. But the fact that you're doing something so simple is the fact of, and it's not even, it's so simple that it's not even like actively like, I'm going to go work out. It's like, no,
right.
you're just going
to
not
You just have
reach.
To not do something.
Yeah.
It's very easy.
It's a process of elimination.
Yeah.
Which is easier than picking an answer.
Yeah. And I want to drink all the time, but I made a choice not to. And so I don't.
It's great. And I'm really glad you made it public.
Yeah.
Well, that really was important for me not to. I think a lot of people, I get really nice messages from people.
I bet. Yeah.
I get really nice messages from people who say that I've helped them, but really I wish I could pretend that that was why I did any of it. I did it because I wanted to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you that because when I quit smoking cigarettes, I said on the air, I was like, look, if you ever see me smoking a cigarette, you can kick me in the balls as hard as you can and I don't even care. That's fine. And I felt like that's almost kind of what you did, where it's like, hey, yeah. everybody, I quit. So now, motherfuckers, if you see me not quit, then I'm a liar and I don't want to be a liar.
I think it's okay to be a little bit like selfish in that. I think we should all be selfish a little bit, you know, and it's okay for you to use that for yourself.
Yeah. If other people get something out of it, that's great. I just can't. I would love them to. I love talking to people about it. I talk about it all the time. But I did it for me. And I feel very good about that.
It's great.
But there is a component of it that feels remarkably, you know, you have to fight it, because at some point when you get so many messages and really nice emails and things like that, you start feeling obligated to not drink for other people. And that's not really healthy for me.
No, it's not.
So I try to not over-engage because I just need to keep it going for me.
I think you should engage as much as it motivates you. If engaging helps you go another day without drinking, go for it.
Again, it goes back to the original premise again, which is that I don't see myself as inspirational.
Right.
And so I don't think people should try to be like me. And when people say it, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But I like it. It feels nice, but it feels disarming.
So here's the question, though, because you said, you know, you don't feel like you're inspirational, but on the other hand, you're saying all these people are contacting you and saying nice things, and obviously you're helping people who maybe not couldn't have done it until they read your story, because you were not only public with your outing, but you've been very public with updating people along the way with how you're doing. So you are an inspiration. I'm sorry. You are. Along.
You know what it is?
I don't think.
I think maybe I can't acknowledge that because I already, I think if I liked myself, I would really be a pain in the ass. I think I'd be a real prick.
Everybody that likes themselves, like, you know, too much.
Yeah, I already have such a strong personality and I'm so aggressive in the way I approach things. If I really like believed in myself and thought I was great, I don't think that'd be healthy.
Here's the thing. I think you like yourself, but it manifests, it's in the best way possible, because it's like, if you didn't like yourself, you would still be drinking.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So you like yourself just enough.
I like being alive.
Exactly. So that's liking yourself. That's why I say being selfish is a survival mechanism. Of course, we need to eat. We need to survive. Like, if this is how we keep going, you know.
Is this podcast usually funnier?
No, it's not.
Okay, because I've brought no pressure.
There's no pressure to
I'm
be
just
funny.
Curious.
No.
On August 14th, so about 2 weeks ago, you wrote still sober on your blog. What's the Tumblr, is it?
Tumblr, yeah. Theyearofelon.tumblr.com.
So why? Why did you need to say that?
Every once in a while, someone will leave a half-empty glass of wine in my house, and I'll be cleaning it up. And I'll be walking it over to the sink. And I'm not afraid of drinking again. I'm not afraid of becoming a drinker again. It's not something that I'm worried about. But in those moments, it feels so silly to waste this thing, to pour the wine down the drain when I could taste it and it would have no real impact on my life. And I'd like to. I'd like to know what it's like. And I know it wouldn't make me drink tomorrow. I believe that. I know that. But I've made this kind of arbitrary decision that I won't drink anything ever, right? So in those moments, I really like to take a second and readdress what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and to continue the conversation kind of with myself primarily. Because usually what happens is I'll get really manic in a moment like that. And I'll just run to my computer and I'll type and I'll write that thing in 25 seconds. Hmm. I'll just shit it all out. All the stuff I write is like that. It just comes out of moments of sheer mania. And it's unedited and unfiltered. I don't go back and change it. I just write what I'm feeling about this stuff right now. And it helps me. It's like, it's the same thing as drinking, right? It's this expression of a thing, of a feeling, of an emptiness to fill a thing, some fucking thing to be alive. And so that's why I did it. And so every time you see an update, it's because I just had a little fucking meltdown.
Interesting.
That's good. I'd rather you do that than have a sip.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And the sip wouldn't matter, but it doesn't matter because I just really believe in agreements. I really believe in staying true to the thing you said you would do. As long as all parties are invested in what the agreement of the thing is, you should do that.
And you're a man of your word.
Yeah, as long as everyone's in on it with me.
What does that mean exactly? We have to agree with what you're doing? Is that what you're saying?
No, no, no. If I'm being asked to be honest with you, I'll be honest with you as long as you're being honest with me.
Gotcha.
The minute you're not being honest with me, it's out the window.
Okay, let me ask you this. What is sobriety like compared to being being a drunk? Like,
yeah.
What's sober life like?
It's depressing. You have to be there all the time.
Yeah.
Yep. I just told Guy yesterday I had to go to a bachelorette party.
Yeah.
And I love her to, and she doesn't even drink that much. Like, this was like the one day she's going to get hammered all year. But I was the only sober one. And like, after the first 2 hours, I was just like, I'm feeling everything.
Yeah. Being there all the time.
Present.
Yeah. It's rough. Again, when you quit drinking, at least for me, the hard part wasn't not drinking. It was doing things sober, going to concerts, getting on planes, going to dinner. Right. Retraining yourself as an adult to do all those things without the kind of the nice numbness of alcohol. So life feels long and occasionally boring. And whatever you're feeling, you feel you're able, at least I'm able, to isolate the variables. So my emotions become more closely tied to actual things as opposed to kind of just swirling amorphous things, which causes you to continuously dissect your situation, which is anxiety producing.
Of course.
Yeah.
But
on the other hand, I feel like...
I make sobriety sound so great, don't
but
I?
But no. But here's what I like to say to people. I mean, that's true. It sucks because, I mean... You know, I'm on anti-anxiety meds,
mm-hmm.
you know, like on the other hand, though, it makes those feelings that are really great. Great.
Yeah.
Like amazing.
Absolutely. That's the thing.
You notice them more.
Absolutely.
And you remember them.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah. So and those things you can't like describe. You would totally disregard it if you were drunk or forget. Or
absolutely.
Blackout.
But going back to failing, right? Almost everything in life is going to not be good.
Right.
Almost always. So you have to live through all those. You do get the positives. And when you get them, they're full and complete. And you remember them, which is also fun. But you do have to live with all the failures.
Yeah.
On a quick side note, did you do any kind of like AA or any kind of therapy around that? No, you did. You really went cold turkey.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, you know. I just did it.
I have a question, though. So, because I needed this when I would quit drinking. Do you find, is there something, like, I had to find something to do with the extra time I spent drinking?
Yeah, I started cooking.
Okay, great. That's good.
I learned how to cook.
That's awesome. I went to culinary school.
Is that a new addiction for you? Because we all follow Alon on everything.
Yeah, he has nicer dishes than I ever
His
made in culinary
Facebook
school.
His page is almost all, like, pictures of amazing-looking food. Now, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I like being honest. To a fault, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I make fun of people who put pictures of food on Instagram.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, it's not food porn. It's us grilled cheese sandwich kind of thing. I will admit, the shit that you put up looks amazing. Like, you're the one guy that I'm like, I almost don't even want to make fun of people who post pictures because Alon's actually does, like, it's interesting. It's like, ooh, I wonder what that tastes like. That looks delicious. Like, you actually... unfortunately do it because I just hate that whole thing, and then
I hate,
like,
it too
when somebody does it well. You're like, well, fuck, now I have to accept it, you know?
Right.
So fuck you, Alon.
I mean what I'm on right now is really annoying. I'm like just making Japanese food at home three meals a day, and it's
you want to
talk about like being an annoying elitist piece of shit.
Yeah.
I am right there.
Here's my bento box.
Let's talk about uni, huh?
Yeah.
I have two crates in my fridge right now. Seriously, I'm not even kidding. I just have a bunch of uni in wooden boxes that I'm just going to put on some rice I'm going to season later, and that's going to be dinner.
I remember I was in culinary school, and we had a week where we did sushi. We had, like, sushi week.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I told my instructor, I'm like, look, you don't have to pass me on this class. Yeah. I am a Jewish white girl from West LA. No respectable sushi restaurant is going to hire a white Jewish girl.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just, I'm not going to be hired for this.
No.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you can please allow me to make as many mistakes as possible. Because a lot of the mistakes I made, which is I still suck at, is just cutting the fish right and filleting it right.
And I'm sure I'm not great at it, but I'll tell you, when I got up this morning, the first thing I did was take some bluefin, cut it up, and I'm just marinating in some soy right now in my fridge.
See, at least you got something
that makes you dinner.
At least there's something though that, you know, that motivates you to get up in the morning and be excited about something.
Yeah.
And it's not a bottle of wine.
Exactly. You find new things, right? I started doing comedy. Sure. Not a thing I have any interest in doing for a living. It's just a thing to do.
Yeah. I think that's the way people cope with harsh shit in their life. Why
do you think I run 7 Instagram accounts with millions of followers? You think it's
something to do?
It's just something to do.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting thing to do. Writing books, I don't need
life
that.
Life is a lot. It's just learning how to deal with boredom, really.
Life is just something to do.
Yeah. I'm writing books. Do I fucking need a t-shirt line that makes me no money? Of course not.
No.
It's just a thing to do. And I feel weird doing it, so I make it all for charity so I don't feel like a weirdo.
That's why you did it for charity?
I like doing things for charity, and that's a thing I can do. It keeps me busy. It makes me do things. People like it. They get invested.
Speaking of charity.
Yes. I want one other question before we go to wrap this up.
Yeah.
What do you think people can learn about your experience, or what have people come to you and said has been the inspiring part of your story?
Wow. That is good.
And it might feel like self, you know, like patting yourself on the back. But
yeah. You know, everything I've done, let me just preface this really quick, just, and you can do what you will with it. But I was afforded every opportunity. There's no question. I was, you know, I had parents that told me I could be whatever I wanted to be. I had good schooling. I had all the things. I had all the trappings. So just preface with that. But everything that I've done, I've started at the bottom. Before I was a producer, I was a PA. Before I was a PA, I was a caterer. Before I had text from your ex, it didn't exist. I just did shit. I constantly do shit and try shit and throw shit at the wall, and I fail all the time. I've a stack of 25 unproduced screenplays. I have one documentary that got pulled from Netflix after 3 years. Like, so many things.
Sorry, not to, but that's the Lenny Bruce one.
Yeah.
Is that still anywhere?
Yeah, it's on iTunes.
It's called...
Looking for Lenny.
Looking for Lenny. It's awesome. I always heard of Lenny Bruce, and, you know, I'm a big comedy fan. I really didn't know anything about him until I saw your documentary.
Oh, thank you.
So, no, thank you for that, and I hope it goes back on Netflix so more people get to see it.
Yeah.
Or just buy it on iTunes.
Yeah, probably. I mean... And all of, is, you know, that's really it, is that I just, when I wanted to do something and people would say, you can't do that, I would just try.
I mean, it sounds like you're saying throw enough shit against the wall and some of it will stick.
Yeah. I mean, just try shit, do shit, and stop trying to make it perfect. That's the problem that everyone has. Nothing's ever going to be that great. None of this stuff, this text from your ex thing, I don't want to blow your mind, but it's not rocket science. Tinder Nightmares is not rocket science. Unspirational is not rocket science.
Oh, it's not.
It's not.
Aww.
It's just really, really simple stuff that probably other people also had similar ideas. They just didn't do it.
Yeah.
They just didn't do it. I just happened to do it.
Right.
I happened to do a lot of things. And that's partly a result of my mania and my alcoholic tendencies. And my insecurity and my need to be validated, but whatever it is, it makes me do shit all day, every day.
Great.
And that's the best thing, because if you have it in you, I guess eventually something will work.
Right.
And if you don't, hey, it wasn't going to happen anyway. Asshole.
I like that as a last word. So let me ask you this final question, Alon. What is your favorite charity?
I do a yearly donation drive for Next Door Solutions. It's a domestic violence charity out of San Jose.
Okay.
Nextdoor.org.
Well, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to add to that. I'm going to donate to your charity.
Oh, wow.
What I need from you is a number between 1 and 50.
Okay. 34.
34. says $50. I'm going to double that and make it $100 to Next Door Solutions.
Oh, yeah. That's so nice of you. Thank you. Yeah.
$100 to Ilan's charity. And I will also put a link on the SoundCloud. So if anybody else wants to donate, they could donate as well.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'll match your donations for the one. Make it $200.
It's a $200 day for Next Door Solutions.
Wow. This is a chain reaction. I think every guest we've had.
So almost every guest so far has, yes, has matched.
Oh, wow.
So great.
I didn't know that.
That's even better.
I only like to out it once they do it.
Yeah, you can't say it beforehand.
No, because then it's like, well, everybody matched it, so now we're going to peer pressure you to do it.
Everybody except our last guest matched it. Oops, did I just say that out loud?
You did.
Yeah.
Did he match it, our last guest? I don't believe so.
I don't believe so.
Right, so he was the first one.
But we'll see.
Also, the first non-Jew, so maybe that also. No, I'm just kidding. Totally kidding. Ilan Gale, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, guys.
The Year of Ilan on Twitter. Where else do you want people to find you?
You know.
Don't find me.
Don't find me.
No, fine. Text you know, from your ex.
Just walk up to me in the theater, the movie theater, during the movie. Tap me on the shoulder. Take a picture with me. And let me have some popcorn.
A selfie.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Done deal. Thank you, everybody,
for
listening
to Filling
Up. Thank you, Ilan.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Thank you, guys.